Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I've asked Tony Vitagliano to join me because we had just a bunch of folks out. Tim and Wesley and Ray Pritchard's out. Fred Jackson's out.
The dog catcher was out.
The dog catcher. That's right. The guy who makes popcorn for us down, down the hall. So I asked Tony to come on and join. I think he's doing a great job. He's very knowledgeable about what's happening. And Steve Jordahl is in the building, so
yes, he
joins
is.
Us with the Paisley shirt.
What a coincidence that you guys both have the same last name.
Yes.
You get that a lot.
Very rare, yes.
So I'm reading my Twitter feed right now.
Yes.
And I am seeing that Howard Stern is demanding that all Trump supporters stop listening to his radio show, to which I say your terms are acceptable.
Yes. Yeah. I've never listened. No, I take
either.
That back. We kind of went to battle. I'm talking about AFA, American Family Association, against Howard Stern. I want to say back, back in the late 90s, maybe early 2000s. So we were, for a while, I did have to listen to the show because we were targeting. He almost went off the air. I mean, that was a huge battle.
How did we miss that one?
Well, so we went after the advertisers. And because his show is just rank. And it was when it went syndicated, into syndication, was showing up all over the country. And so eventually we had people volunteer to listen and keep track of the advertisers. And we contacted them. Many of them didn't even know they were advertising on the show, what have you.
I had to.
But anyway.
Now you have to.
What's that?
I had to. So now you have to, what you said.
So we had those folks do all that. But I listened. I don't know, for a couple of weeks to his programming, and he is absolutely vile.
Yeah.
And just listen, pray for Howard Stern. We don't cast anyone aside. Pray for him. Pray that God gets through to him. But that doesn't excuse what he's doing. And he hated AFA for a long time. If I were to sit next to him on a plane and mention who I worked for, he probably would get up and walk to the back of the plane. Or try to throw me off. I don't know.
Nothing says bad boy rebel like stumping for the current administration.
Yes.
and calling for your audience to stop, or at least a segment of your audience to stop listening to you.
I just saw it. I thought it said it. Didn't mean to have a whole discussion going on.
Oh, I don't mind having a whole discussion over something minor.
For those of you who tuned in yesterday, I just want to assure everybody I have checked to make sure that all the cuts that I call for are actually loaded to the machine.
Oh, yeah. Yesterday you had that. That was an embarrassing moment for you, wasn't it?
Very embarrassing. I didn't sleep last night because of it.
And you know what? Folks, I guess, maybe think that this is easy to do, live radio. It is not easy.
No.
In fact, Tony and I were talking during the break. What can be difficult is while you're talking about, we just had Chris Woodward talking about a story, I'm thinking about what I want to say. And then as you're saying it, you got to be thinking about what you're going to say next. It is not,
so
it's not difficult to lose your train of thought.
You're not listening to me then is what you're saying.
I wasn't listening.
Think
just
of a response.
Right. Yeah. Well, no, I am. But see, that's the hard thing. Part of me is having to listen to what you say.
I know.
And then what you say when you play a clip from somebody else, I'm listening, and then I'm trying to formulate my response to it. So you had my sympathies yesterday.
Okay.
It's not, live radio is not an easy thing.
Well, listen to this, if you will. You remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about Kamala Harris being accused of plagiarism?
Yes, from Wikipedia.
She plagiarized from Wikipedia, and Christopher Rufo, the reporter, conservative reporter, had reported that. Well, today we have from a guy named Aaron Sabarium on Twitter. This is, I'm reading from his Twitter page because I think if I'm going to report on someone plagiarizing, it's important that I actually give credit to where I'm getting the story here.
Yeah, that's right.
exclusive. In 2007, Kamala Harris plagiarized pages of congressional testimony from a Republican Congress. In 2012, she plagiarized fictional stories about sex trafficking but presented it as real. So
this is Christopher Rufo.
No, this is a new guy.
Okay.
Aaron Sabarium. And
he has,
I mean, pages and pages and pages. I'll show you this Ed. It's just pages of this.
Wow.
of examples that he dug up. But let's talk about the sex trafficking plagiarism. So, again, reading from him, in one of the lengthier passages reviewed by the Free Beacon, she lifted a fictionalized story about a victim of sex trafficking and presented it as a real case.
So is the belief that she thought it was real at the time and then therefore portrayed it, or did...
Well, no. She wanted to take credit for it. This is how we know. The story is about a young woman named Kelly, and she was found in a restroom. She's a trafficking victim. Polaris Project had this story up, and she said she had saved $200 to escape. She called the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, who got her. And here's the reason we know. The story came from the Polaris Project, which is a nonprofit that runs the National Human Trafficking Hotline. It posted stories and vignettes on its websites that were, quote, representative of the types of calls the hotline received and meant for informational purposes only, to preserve confidentiality, the changes, everything. It's been basically fictionalized.
Right. Okay.
But here's how we know that because they found this girl in a restaurant in D.C., according to the Polaris Project, but somehow conveniently she was found in a restroom in San Francisco. When Kamala Harris is retelling the story.
Where was she telling this story? Was this when she's speaking?
She was, Harris included the vignettes in a report she published about the state of human trafficking in California.
Oh, so she purposefully took the story and changed the location.
And changed the location.
To make it California and appropriate.
Right. And you can see here, I'm showing Ed some of the paragraphs. Everything in white there is what she lifted word for word from Polaris Project.
And so there was no she didn't give any indication in this report that this is an example of a story. She was presenting this as this actually happened. Okay.
This is an example of what we're dealing with in San Francisco.
Wow, this is almost word for word.
And it goes on and on and on. I have example after example after example.
So this guy, what's his name again? It's a strange name.
The guy's name is
sounds Armenian.
Aaron Sibarium, Sibarium. I guess he works for one of the news services here.
All right. So okay, this plagiarism thing used to be a big deal for people. Apparently, it's not a big deal anymore.
Well, that was my question. Does this disqualify her?
I think it goes. Listen, I will say this. I've been a writer for 30 years, okay? A little longer than that, before I came here. I came here almost 29 years ago and have been a writer here ever since. But I was writing for weekly newspapers and all that kind of thing. So I've been a writer for, 40 years. One of the scariest scenarios in my mind is to have made a mistake when I'm copying something out and forgetting to, I always try to source everything in case I use that for writing. I'm always terrified of making a mistake and not sourcing a paragraph and using it and being accused of purposefully plagiarizing.
Right.
So I want to say this. It is possible to make a mistake when you're writing.
And who couldn't mistakenly put San Francisco instead?
No. That's a whole different thing.
Right.
It is possible to make a mistake, make that kind of mistake I'm talking about, if you're doing a lot of research and a lot of writing. But it seems to me that Kamala Harris is just a lazy thinker and a lazy writer. Because what you showed me, this is almost word for word, paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. She did not want to do the research herself and to write it out of her own understanding of it. This just strikes me as being lazy. And so, Tony, kind of to answer Steve's question, I'm not sure it's disqualifying anymore because we let a lot of stuff go in terms of personal character. Tim said yesterday, whether we like it or not, character doesn't seem to matter. This is a character issue.
Right.
I don't know if in the minds of most voters that's going to matter, but this does tell us something about Kamala Harris.
Yeah, it's not surprising to me that she is plagiarizing writings, not giving proper references in her writings. Her campaign, to a certain extent, is plagiarizing policies from Donald Trump's campaign.
That shouldn't really
surprise anybody. Yeah. Just looking over on Donald Trump's paper, you know, oh, no tax on tips.
Yeah. Answer number four is no taxes on tips.
Kamala Harris. Yeah, so that's not surprising. To me, if I was an average voter, which I am, I would look at that and say, she's probably not qualified for any of the jobs she's had, any of the positions she's held, because, somebody who's... We've all been there when we were younger in high school, right? You want to take the easy way out whenever you can, right? And
what are you trying to say, Tony? Are you trying to confess something about
certain people?
High school?
Not me.
Other people say. I don't say.
But
asking for a friend.
But I'm also not running for the highest office in the world. Right. So
you say, Ed, that it's a laziness. It might be. But I'm wondering, because it's from just about every different area of scope that she's written on, whether it's congressional testimonies, books that she wrote, or now reports that she's sending in. I'm wondering if it also reflects the lack of ability to think deeply about anything. If she's not smart enough to write this for herself. She can't seem to write to say anything that isn't scripted for her.
Right. Well, we've seen the video of her stepping out of her vehicle after she's been in there for 30 minutes, walking up to a podium, and then still opening a binder for to do a brief, you know, a quick press briefing. She had to have a binder with notes to answer, you know, to allegedly answer, you know, questions to see.
Well, and let me just toss this in, and I don't normally like this, what I'm about to do, okay? Because this is a little bit hearsay, okay? But we have heard from people who have worked for her and with her that she does not like to do her briefings, even as vice president.
Right.
She doesn't like the briefings. She's got better things to do. And listen, someone like Condoleezza Rice, okay, brilliant professor. She thought deeply about things. People like that who are thinkers, they don't mind briefings because they're learning and they love learning. Yeah. So you give me, I wouldn't take 100 Kamala Harris's for one Condoleezza Rice. I just saw her recently on something and I thought, I forgot how brilliant this woman is. And so
you can tell the difference.
People who like to think and think deeply, they don't mind briefings.
I don't understand how this election is so close, frankly, except that people just hate Trump.
Yeah, I think that's driving it. I think the abortion issue is driving some of Kamala Harris's support. And there are people who share Kamala Harris's worldview. They're on that radical side of the Democratic Party and could not consider voting for anyone who does not hold the same beliefs. So, but to your point, it is some, there are people on the left who can't believe that Christians are voting for Donald Trump.
Right.
He's been married several times and okay. I understand that, but what we're engaged in here is really a battle to the death in terms of two mutually exclusive worldviews. And only one is going to come out on top.
Right.
Hopefully and you're speaking.
I'm speaking metaphorically.
Metaphorically.
Yes. I don't want to visit from the FBI.
All right. Hey, Donald J. Trump has broken the mainstream media. I'm now plagiarizing from myself.
This is hilarious.
So you remember this weekend, Donald Trump visited the Pittsburgh Steelers the football game at Pittsburgh Steelers, and there was audio of the crowd chanting, USA, USA, USA. Mm-hmm. Someone pointed out Kamala Harris could very well go to any game she wants to as well. She hasn't yet.
Yeah.
But anyway, after the game, Donald Trump posted a picture of himself in a Steelers uniform with the number 47, which is the president number he wants to be, looking pretty buff, huge arms. I mean,
this is
looks
an AI generated.
Well, now this is the thing: is it AI or is it real? We don't know.
Donald Trump made it. He said, "No, it's real.
It's real.
It's a real photo.
It's the best ever." Brent, I have asked Brent to put this up on our Facebook page. You guys can go look at it if you want. But this was Newsweek's headline. Donald Trump has shared what is likely an AI-generated image on his Truth Social account showing him as a player for the Pittsburgh Steelers. In the article, they write this. Verified photos of the former president at the football game on Sunday night show him in a suit at Acrisure Stadium in Pittsburgh, wearing a blue suit and a red tie. However, the image posted on Truth Social depicts Trump on a football field wearing a jersey for the Pittsburgh Steelers. There is no evidence this ever occurred. Trump's torso and arms also appear to have been altered to appear more muscular than they do in other photos and videos of Trump in sportswear, such as those posted by Trump's golf Instagram account in July.
So are you telling me
we fact-checked this?
Newsweek felt the need to fact-check this.
Yes. Well, just in case.
Dad, I also have a confession to make.
Yes.
That picture that I sent to you and Mom of me in the astronaut suit with the moon background.
I really
didn't go to the moon. I want to get ahead of the fact checkers. Right. I wanted to get ahead of
the
media.
Let's get it out there.
I never really actually went to the moon.
This is deeply disappointing, son. I can't tell you. All right. So when you showed me this morning, you sent this. I was walking from the parking lot into work.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I got your text.
Right.
With that picture and the Newsweek fact check. And I could not believe that it was real. I'm not talking about the picture. It was clearly it's an AI-generated picture with Trump looking buff as a Pittsburgh Steeler. It was a great photo.
Yeah.
What I couldn't believe is that Newsweek wasted resources to fact-check this and that there was at least one person, maybe several layers, that thought this was necessary.
At Newsweek, right, editorially.
Well, It's juxtapose this, Newsweek spending mental energy, time and effort and money on writing up a quick fact check of this. Juxtapose that against their coverage of what we just talked about, the Kamala Harris plagiarisms.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean.
Good point.
I mean, it's just, you know, we want to devote resources to a AI-generated photo of Trump in a Steelers uniform, but there's going to be crickets when it comes to investigating and actual journalism.
Right.
About whether Kamala Harris plagiarized,
and what that means.
And what that means.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. John MacArthur, great charismatic preacher. No, not charismatic. He's got charisma.
Just the opposite.
Just the opposite.
He's got charisma.
He has charisma. He's a great preacher down in Southern California. And he has written a book basically saying that politics is not going to save this country.
Yeah. Why government can't save
why
America
government
or
can't
something,
save.
Something like that.
Anyway, he was at his church. Every so often they sit down at his church and have a Q&A with him, and he takes questions from his congregation, any topic that's interesting to them. And somebody asked him about the election. If government can't save you, what are we supposed to do with this election? Well, this is what he had to say, cut 11.
The other day, Kamala Harris said, "This is the most election ever." So, we're not electing a pastor or pastors or elders or church leaders. I think it comes down to one dominating thing: who would keep us and our children most safe? Safe from the encroachment of enemies? Terrorists, immorality, corruption, child mutilators, criminals, because that's government's role, to protect those who do good and punish those who do evil. So who is most likely to do that?
And he said it's not even close.
Mm-hmm. Well,
he didn't mention Trump's name from the stage, at least in the clip that I heard.
Yes.
It was obvious who he was.
I disagree. The book I was talking about, Why Government Can't Save You, is written by John MacArthur years ago.
He's right, too.
Technically, that is true, that in terms of salvation, eternity, government can't accomplish that. But that wasn't the reason why the book was written. So I disagree with that book. But I'm a huge fan of John MacArthur and some of his other books, some of which were kind of life-changing for me, The Gospel According to Jesus, The Gospel According to the Apostles, where he kind of broke down the necessity for Christians to be obedient to God, okay? Not for salvation, but as an expression of it. So I am, generally speaking, a big fan of John MacArthur, though not his particular views on Christian political activism. But during the COVID lockdowns and when his Bible college was sued by the state of California, I think, he certainly understood the importance of having government do what's right in God's eyes. And so for that, listen, tip of the hat, we don't have to agree on everything. It's in the body of Christ. John MacArthur is a man of integrity and is a fine gospel preacher. But I am delighted to hear him say something like that.
What he's saying here is that government has a role. The role isn't theological. It won't save you, and there's a lot of things government doesn't do very well. But one of the things it's tasked with doing is protecting its citizens. It's supporting good and punishing or denying evil.
Right. It's right out of Romans 13. I wrote a couple of articles for our monthly magazine, The Stand magazine, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, something like that, where I did one article on Romans 13, which is when government serves God, and then Revelation 13, talking about the first beast out of the sea, when government serves Satan, to compare the fact that there is Romans 13, Revelation 13, there are two ways this can go with government. And there, it's a gradient, obviously. There's a lot in between those two, but I absolutely agree with John MacArthur here.
Yeah, I think it just goes to show when you have someone who's held previous views, you know, that, and they've kind of come around and realized what's at stake. I think that just demonstrates the state that our nation is in and what people's views of where we're at are. We're not in a good place at all. You mentioned the duty of government. Government is lapsed on that. Our government has lapsed on that duty for some time, and not only is it lapsed on its God-given duties of protecting its people and punishing evil, it's actually doing the opposite. It's glorifying evil.
Flip those.
Yeah, and enforcing evil even to an extent on its own.
And punishing what God considers to be good.
Yes, and punishing godliness.
Yeah.
So I have to
believe that the radical left would go even further down that road if they could.
Absolutely,
like any fascist government, or communist government, they would. When Tim Wildman says they'd put us in concentration camps if they could get away with it, there are at least some on the radical left that would do that.
Yeah,
I want to know when I'm going to meet Stan, the guy that the magazine's named after.
Oh, the Stand?
Stan.
Did I say Stan?
I thought you said Stan magazine. I want to meet him.
Stan magazine.
I've heard about him for so long.
Well, he's played a big part in my life, just like that. Yeah. Stan the man, I call him. All right, folks, that's all the time we have. I think we had some good discussions here. Hope it was helpful to you. Listen, it's not easy. We understand that here to oftentimes extrapolate from the scriptures to understand how in 2024 we are to interact with government and culture. That's not easy. We understand that. It's difficult, but we hope we are helping you to find your place and what you're supposed to do. Anyway, more great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. You've been listening to today's issues. Lord willing, we'll see you right back here tomorrow.